Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show.
I am curious because we're in debate season.
Debate season.
Yes, it's the best season.
It's the best season.
Little paprika on the season.
Oh, you went that way. I was thinking more like Nova Scotia.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, I was like, I was going to become a chef. I was going to become
Yeah, I was Canadian.
Okay. All right. Good to know that's your Canadian accent.
Yes.
I was just wondering when the Jerica for America campaign is going to kick off.
It's 2032.
2032. I thought it was in the 2020s.
No.
2024.
No.
Nothing
no,
like that? Okay, no. 2032.
I've been saying that for like a decade. I actually realized this past weekend. How terrible is
that? Do you like how I also know this? I clearly have been paying attention for the last 10 years.
Yeah. Jerica for America 2032.
Okay. So now we'll get started.
Oh. Just keep that in.
I will now. All right, welcome. What are you doing? You're ruining everything. Jerica is here today.
Hi.
So, welcome to Podcast for Good. This is season 3, episode 24. We're talking about creatures big and small today. My name is Heather Lucas. I'm the fiscal and policy coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive. And today I am joined by
Jerica Ferguson, marketing and development coordinator.
Hi, Jerica.
Hi.
I'm glad you're here. We're going to be talking with Lorna Smith. She's the executive director of Western Wildlife Outreach. And they are an organization that really focuses on four animals, black bear, grizzly bear,
cougars
and gray wolves.
Mm-hmm.
So today, we get to talk about animals. I haven't talked about animals with you in a while. I feel like maybe not ever.
Actually, I don't think we've ever spoke about animals except your cats.
Yeah, just off the record, my cats.
Off the record.
Not on a podcast.
Only your animals.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's pretty much it.
That's what we should always talk about, off the record, my cats.
But I do like that we're going to talk about, like, carnivores.
I think
I like the prey. Like the prey animal.
Nice.
Yeah, I think it's exciting.
With the big teeth and the
like,
claws.
Every time I think of cougars, I just want to be cougars.
Yeah.
Go cougar country.
Cougar country.
That's my southern accent.
Well, you did kind of go to school out in cougar country.
I actually went more gray wolf country in eastern Washington because it's the northeast corridor of gray wolves, and it's a big issue.
Did you know that before this podcast?
I did, because when I interned, we had a debate, a mock debate on gray wolves and what to do over in eastern Washington.
Interesting.
Boom!
Look at you.
Yeah.
Look at you.
I know. It's pretty cray.
All right. Well, before we get into even more cray and the interview with Lorna, we're going to ask the question of the podcast. So, Jerica, if you... Now, of course, this is a ridiculous question, but I think that it's worthy and it needs to be asked. And because we're talking about creatures, I want to know if you could ride any creature to work and back one day this year, what creature would it be? And it doesn't have to be real. Just want to preface.
So I could say liger?
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
But those are real.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Napoleon Dynamite. I would say any creature.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to ride like an eagle.
Okay.
But like, I know that would like hurt the back of an eagle, but I think it'd be really cool to soar too. Yeah. Because then like, you could like look, I don't know. I like I like the idea of flight.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you'd,
but I also like want to control the eagle.
So you'd have like a muzzle and like a...
Yeah. Or just like no muzzle. Like maybe just like a harness.
Okay.
Like a harness maybe. So I could like
Okay.
If we're going too fast, like, slow down.
Yeah.
And, like, something to hold on to, like, when we decide to, like, dip together.
Okay. Nice. Nice.
What about you?
Well, I thought, you know, maybe dinosaur would be cool because, like,
dinosaur... You guys talk about dinosaurs too often.
Well, it's because we're nerds.
Yeah.
Then I thought it'd be funny if there was a small creature that was enlarged because I'm 5'9", so I'm not going to shrink just to go to work one day.
No. Yeah, God forbid. Yeah. This isn't Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
No, it's not. So I'm going to have to ride something that is at least, you know, big enough for me to ride. Things. Right? So I think really, more than anything... I want to ride a giant snake because it'd be terrifying.
What if you had just like a whole bunch of snakes and then you put your feet on them and then they slithered down the street?
Well, I'm
that
really
would
bad.
Be terrifying and I wouldn't come to work that
I know,
day.
But I'm really bad with roller skates. Like if I don't have something to hold on to, I know that I wouldn't be able to like ride.
What
the
if you
snakes.
Just kind of like lounge
Maybe
on
if
them.
I sat on the snakes, but then that is like a snake chair.
Ew. I hate everything about this. I saw a snake the other
Which
day and it
makes
scared
me. Love it.
Yeah, torture is your form of love.
It is. I love you so much. Please let me torture you. So, speaking of that, I don't know, that's not a good segue, but, you know, whatever.
Give me some facts.
No,
not Do you
yet.
See that? Oh, okay.
No, not okay. yet.
Well,
see,
I
See, that's topic three.
I don't read.
I know. So, with that, we are going to transition to our interview with Laura Smith, Executive Director of Western Wildlife Outreach. Here she is. Okay, so we're here today with Lorna Smith. She's the Executive Director of Western Wildlife Outreach. Lorna, thanks for joining us this morning.
I'm thrilled to be here.
So, can you give us a little history about Western Wildlife Outreach and what you do for the community?
Well, yes. So our organization was founded over 10 years ago by a gentleman named Chris Morgan, who has gone on to be very active in the world of filmmaking. But when Chris started the organization, the focus was on grizzly bear recovery in the North Cascades. And that's still one of our major focus areas, and we work with a consortium of other conservation groups trying to push that effort forward. And once I became executive director, it became very clear to me that the same issues that we were facing where people had concerns about grizzly bears, be it in the North Cascades or elsewhere, those issues really also applied to other large carnivores. Mm. So now we focus primarily on grizzly bears, okay. black bears, cougars or mountain lions, and gray wolves, which are beginning to recover in the state of Washington. So those are our main focus species, but okay. we also talk to communities about coyotes, bobcats, and some of the smaller carnivores as well.
Speaking of recovery, are wildlife animal population, are they declining, staying the same, or increasing in our state?
Well, overall, I would have to say that, you know, worldwide and in Washington, you know, wildlife populations in general are declining simply uh-huh. based on math,
okay.
which is they're losing habitat. And, you know, that is the most important element that, you know, wildlife needs to survive. Obviously, they uh-huh. have to have a place to live.
Yeah. Specifically on the gray wolf that you just mentioned, you're saying that they're recovering?
So gray wolves are beginning to recover in Washington. We now have, we now know that we have over 100 individual gray wolves in 15 to 18 packs in the
wow.
state, which is a good, puts them on a good trajectory for recovery, but we feel like they're still a long ways from meeting that goal statewide.
Mm-hmm.
Those wolves are mostly concentrated up in the northeast corner of the state.
Right.
And they're beginning to disperse to other areas. But mm-hmm. before we would feel we could say, yes, gray wolves are at a recovery point, we would want to see them distributed in western Washington, on the
okay.
Olympic Peninsula, in southwest
yeah.
Washington, as well as the northeast corner and southeast corner of the state.
Okay.
So there's habitat in all of those areas. We want to see that habitat occupied.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you.
So Why would you say that it's important that we conserve and protect animals like bears, cougars, and wolves?
Well, those are the top carnivores, and they are what we call apex predators. And by sitting at the top of the whole cascading event underneath them, they have a undue influence on what happens to species, you know, beneath them, if you will. So they're prey species. Mm-hmm. In the case of cougar, that's primarily black-tailed deer on this side of the mountains. Elk and white-tailed deer also on the other side of the mountain.
Okay.
And, you know, cougars keep those populations healthy by taking, you know, only younger animals that have a less of a chance to survive, sick animals. Also, you know, to use the example from Yellowstone National Park, which many of us point to, as wolves began to recover there, elk populations, which had, you know, grown to a point that was not sustainable,
right,
were brought back down to a level which was sustainable, mm-hmm, and also then the streams and rivers in the park began to recover their riparian or streamside vegetation,
yeah,
which provided shelter for birds, mm-hmm, reduced water temperature for fish. So that's why it's important to keep large carnivores, those top predators, on the landscape. They provide health throughout the ecosystem.
Okay.
So when it comes to animals recovering in a habitat, is that really easy to see for conservationists or people who work in organizations like yourself?
Is it easy to track and,
yeah,
monitor? Is that kind of what you're asking?
Yeah.
Yeah. It isn't easy, obviously. And in the case of the gray wolves, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, working with some of the tribes as well, have been putting collars on wolves to monitor their movement. And also, with the original purpose that ranchers could then see where the wolves are moving and hopefully keep their cattle out of harm's way. But no, it's never an easy thing. We have an ongoing black bear research project in the state right now, headed up by the bear and puma expert from Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, Rich Beausoleil. That project is going to show us a lot about black bear populations. They may not be as high as we thought they were. They may not be as robust as we thought they were.
Mm-hmm, okay.
So it takes a lot of science, of dollars, frankly, to do that kind of research. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So actually, since you're kind of, we're speaking about bears, I noticed on your website that you guys have tips for coexistence with grizzlies. Does those tips kind of include what happens when you encounter wildlife while you're hiking or camping?
Absolutely.
Could you talk about a few of those
things? We frankly spend a lot of our time when we're out in the community, out at schools, talking to people, students, adults, about what do you do if you encounter these animals. There's a lot of fear, not based on facts. So we try to give people the actual facts on how these animals behave, what to do should you encounter them. The fact of the matter is, deaths or attacks by large carnivores are extremely rare.
Yeah.
Just for example, there's been one death ever to a black bear in Washington State, two to cougar, none that we know of grizzly bears or wolves. So they're extremely rare. Nonetheless, these animals are capable of doing, you know, damage to people. So we do want people to know how to behave around them. And we give those tips for, behaving safely. In the case of grizzly bear country, and of course we have fewer than 70 grizzly bears in the entire state, in the Selkirk Mountains in the Northeast, and then maybe a handful in the North Cascades. But in grizzly bear country, we recommend that people carry and know how to use bear spray.
Okay.
And we also give the same advice to trail runners, mountain bikers, in any time they're in forested areas where the visibility might be poor and where any of these large carnivores could be come upon by surprise. And, you know, that's a situation we don't want to see happen.
Exactly.
So, bear spray is a good tool, but so is just looking like a human, sounding like a human. You know, that is the best deterrent, because
okay,
these these animals are all way more afraid of us than we are of them.
Yeah. No, thank you so much. That's perfect.
So you had mentioned the bear population for grizzlies at 70 in our state.
And that is a guess.
Okay.
We know that the population in the North Cascades is very depleted. There are so few bears, we cannot find them to count them. So that's why there's a recovery plan underway at the federal level to restore a population back to the North Cascades. There's an environmental impact statement underway right now examining those possibilities. But then in the Selkirks, which are in the far northeast corner of the state, that's where the bigger population of grizzly bears, you know, exists, still scattered over thousands of square miles and, you know, very unlikely to be encountered. You know, my partner and I go out looking for grizzly bears and never have, you know, seen them in Washington state. They're extremely rare.
So when you said 70 as an estimate, what kind of range were they before? Were they in the hundreds or thousands before?
They certainly were, you know, when historical records started for the state of Washington, you know, before the trappers really got a foothold here, yes, certainly the grizzly bear population was in the thousands.
Okay.
And, you know, we have old records of trappers who took out, you know, tens of thousands of bear hides, cougar hides,
goodness,
bear hides from Washington state. So
okay.
It was that trapping, you know, frenzy, if you will, that really led to the depletion of grizzly bear populations. They're very slow to reproduce. So that's their downfall. Once they get below a certain population number, then it's very hard on their own, you know, to get back up. They also have very large home ranges, so it's just hard for a male and female to even encounter each other.
Sure.
What does a home range mean? What do you mean by that?
That would be the animal's territory that it covers over the course of even a year.
Oh.
You know, during the year, they're going to be feeding in different places. This time of the year, as the snow mountain, you know, melts higher up, bears often will move up into those meadows that are just greening up to find some of their favorite foods.
Okay.
So, and also just to encounter food, they need to, you know, cover a large area. So for grizzly bears, that's a large area.
So you mentioned earlier that bears, cougars, wolves are apex predators and they are prey animals. So as far as any kind of livestock or household pets, how common is it that these types of animals will focus on livestock or pets as prey?
Well, they will if there is an opportunity where, you know, that's mostly opportunistic.
Okay.
When they would, you know, prey on, say, a cow, prey on a dog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we tell people that it's our responsibility to take care of our pets and our livestock and, you know, keep them out of harm's way. So we demonstrate to people how to put up the proper fencing depending on the situation or what other kind of safeguards they can put in place.
Sure.
All of these animals prefer their natural prey. And whenever we've done studies to see what are they primarily eating, even in more urban settings, you know, it's still primarily natural prey, but they will opportunistically, you know, say a cougar encounters somebody's domestic cat while he's out hunting for rabbits or deer, you know, they might take a cat. So,
yeah.
We also encourage everybody to keep their cats in at night for a lot of good reasons.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Could you actually go back a little bit to, we were kind of speaking about endangered animals or animals that the wolves particularly that we talked about, but not just them. Are we in Washington State on the right path to have these endangered species thrive again? Do you think?
I believe we are, but there are cautionary steps along the way.
Yeah.
Any of these large animal species are going to survive into the future in Washington and worldwide only with human indulgence and humans allowing it. We have now, you know, humans control the planet and all the habitats upon it. So if we want to keep wildlife in our future, and I believe the health of humans is tied to the health of wildlife and their habitats, we need to make a place for them where they can be. We need to know how to live with them and, you know, sometimes give them their space.
Yeah.
You know, animals need core areas of habitat. I was talking about home range. Home ranges also have to include corridors where they can move, say, from that upper meadow area in the summer to lower down where there's, you know, less harsh weather in the winter. We need to keep those areas of habitat available for wildlife. And, you know, that takes active support on the part of the human community to see that happen. Wow. You know, in Eastern King County, for instance, you know, 50,000 people a year are moving into King County, with most of that growth being on the east side of Lake Washington. And those people, those new houses are being built on top of some of the best black bear habitat in the state, in the west probably.
Yeah.
And for those black bears to stay there, people have to learn how to live with them, which mostly means keeping any food attractants away from them. Mm-hmm. Making sure their refuse containers are not put out till the day of pickup, or better yet, having bear-resistant garbage containers that they use. Watching bird feeders that are not available to bears, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. Then the bears can live in the, you know, in the core areas, use green belts as corridors, move around, and stay out of people's backyards.
Mm-hmm.
It's always food attractants that bring black bears into contact with people.
Okay. No, thank you.
So let's say someone hears this podcast and they want to begin giving to Western Wildlife Outreach. Can you talk about what donations do for your organization?
Well, the donations that we receive go right into our programs. We have probably one of the lowest overheads of any nonprofit out there. And we have educational programs that we go out and give to schools and the community. We have a 17-foot trailer that contains displays and animals and, models of skulls and things like that we take around to the schools. So donations help us keep our programs on the road and also contribute to some of the small film projects we make, etc. So, you know, we feel the service we provide is critical for the survival of these animals in Washington State and even Idaho and Oregon, where we also serve to a certain extent. People don't want to conserve what they don't understand, what they don't know about, they don't value it. So we feel it's just, you know, really critical to get this message out to as wide an audience as possible.
Absolutely.
We kind of spoke about it before we started. Do you have any upcoming events or programs you'd like to highlight?
Actually, July's kind of a slow season, so not now, but I would encourage people to visit our website, westernwildlife.org, and look at the calendars there, and they'll see
Perfect.
What events are coming up.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Lorna.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
All right, and that was our interview with Lorna Smith, Executive Director of Western Wildlife Outreach. Did you learn anything new today, Jerrica?
I did, actually. I learned the term home range, which I actually thought was really interesting because I really didn't understand. Like, I mean, I understood that, like, bears and animals move.
Yeah.
But specifically that term where, like, they are really live within a range. And talking about that coexistence and talking about green belts of, like, how we here in Washington, Idaho, Oregon, but really everywhere, can start making communities more accepting of wildlife. Because as she was saying, like, we do hold wildlife in our hands. Like, we do have such a great impact when it not only comes to our environment, but also the wildlife that live in that.
Yeah.
And just talking about when she said, like, you know, there's hundreds or thousands of grizzlies here previously, and now there's roughly only about 70.
Yeah, that's sad.
That impact is us. And it is because a lot of that has to do with us moving into areas that are like black bear areas or gray wolf areas. And so it was really nice to hear that there is recovery efforts that are taking place, but it is a lot of work to come.
I do think, too, that when people move into new areas, that is not something they consider
I don't even think the wildlife
population.
Does homeowner associations or, like, any, like, people go out and be like, so there's a lot of black bear area. Yeah, let's clear it. And, like, start building homes? Like, is that, like, a thought? Like, you know how we think, like, this is on, like, a slide hill. So, like, we shouldn't build homes, like, near here. Is that a thought about wildlife? I feel like it's not.
Maybe we should reach out to homeowners associations and ask.
Just start calling. Mass calling.
Hey.
Do you know this black bear country?
What are you doing about it?
Yeah, pretty much. But I do question.
Foghorn Leghorn here.
I do really question that, though, because I don't think that it is a thought. I think that we see it as land, and we see property, and we say, let's build some homes.
Yeah.
Where I think it would be kind of cool to start building communities where that coexistence does exist, that we do feel more natural to those areas, and, you know, use the tips that they said about how to coexist with bears and how to coexist with wildlife, and what to do when you do see them, and have more responsibility, like keeping your pets inside at night, creating fencing that actually, you know, deters wolves and other prey. I think
bear-proof garbage and
exactly containers. Like that's so smart. I never really thought, like, actually our garbage can should be more proof. Anyways, like,
because it's not just
like rodents and stuff get in as well.
So now it comes to the part of the show where it's Philip's definitely favorite part, where I'm going to ask you trivia questions.
This isn't my favorite part, though.
I know. I wasn't sure.
You questions.
Well, I wrote them, so I will know the answers.
That's cheating.
Yes, it is.
All right, go ahead.
So I want you to name in Washington State. Give me three different, other than the animals that Lorna discussed, three different animals who are either threatened in our state or on the endangered species list.
But she just told me three that are.
I said not those.
I think eagles.
Let's see. I don't see eagle on this list.
I feel like they're endangered.
Okay, you can feel that.
Other endangered species.
Mm-hmm.
Is there fish?
There are definite fish on here.
Like the salmon or something.
Let's see. So
steelhead trout.
We have on this list.
I feel like you should organize this by type.
I could have done that, but then I also didn't care that much. I was just like, I want to get stuff down. You know, I don't see anything on here about fish. What is that about?
I've met with another charity. I met with another charity, and they specifically said
that Internet let me down.
Internet's letting you down. So that's two for two for me.
Oh.
Because two. The internet's letting you down.
Okay.
Let's see. Is this just in Washington or everywhere?
I pulled it for Washington. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say elephant, but that's not in Washington.
No, unfortunately.
Washington.
That'd be rad if elephants were named after this place.
Is it fish, bird?
Can you not think of animals right now?
No.
Okay.
Because well, you already said cougars, bears,
let me
wolves.
Help you out.
All right.
So there are a number of different types of whale.
Oh, I should have picked that. I knew.
Yeah, but you said fish.
Well, they're mammal.
Fact. So blue whale, fin whale, killer whale.
All whales, because we need to start
Pacific
saving our
right
Puget Sound.
Whale, we do. I don't know if it's sea whale, S-E-I, or say whale. I'm not sure how you say it. Then you did say bird at one point. So there's Colombian sharp-tailed grouse.
Oh,
there's
not
the marbled. The grouse. The marbled murrelet.
Okay.
The northern spotted owl.
I knew that one, too. I just thought that we recovered it already.
No.
No.
The tufted puffin.
Oh!
Yeah. And then there are other ones that are large.
Save the puffin.
Like the lynx.
Yeah. Oh.
Then there's things like the...
I feel like we didn't count those.
Oregon spotted frog. So.
Oregon spotted frog.
Mm. So then I also want to ask you...
Okay.
And I'm going to give you some answers, okay? Some options here.
Thanks.
So you don't just say fish. So, we talked with Lorna about wolves, bears, cougars, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, how many wolves traditionally consistent, like, they consist in a pack, like, typically, okay? So, how many wolves to a pack? 3 to 5, 5 to 10, or 8 to 12?
3 to 5.
It's typically 5 to 10.
Mm.
0 for 1.
1 for 1.
How much does a black bear weigh? Is it 200 pounds, 250 pounds, or 300 pounds?
300 pounds.
About approximately 250. Adult females weigh an average of 140 pounds. Wow. So for whatever reason, they're like 100
pounds less.
I weigh
more than a female black bear.
Me too. So how fast could a grizzly bear run? Could a grizzly bear run 15 to 20 miles per hour, 22 to 27 miles per hour, or 30 to 35 miles per hour?
There's no way. I'd say the first one.
See, yeah, like you think black bears or grizzly bears are slow, right? No, 30 to 35 miles per hour.
How?
Yeah.
They have no room to run. I don't feel like that's true.
Okay. Then last question.
Where'd you get your internet facts from? Urban Dictionary?
No, actually. I would say these facts, actually, I got them off the Western Wildlife Outreach
website. Fine, then they're real. Dang it.
All right, last one. How many cougars live in Washington? Is it about 1,200, 1,900, or 2,600?
1,900.
Yay! Look at you! Yeah, so Department of Fish and Wildlife estimates the adult cougar population size is between 19 and 2,100.
Okay, well.
Yeah, so there's that.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine, Dawn.
Shout out to Dawn.
Shout out Dawn Baker. It's fine. So, upcoming events. We are having our 35th birthday party.
Woo!
July 16th at 6 p.m. At the Olympia Center, which is downtown Olympia.
We'll be doing a film festival where you can watch some crazy funny CFD videos, have drinks, have some snacks, and have a really good time with the CFD staff.
Yeah, we will all be in attendance.
There will also be prizes.
Yeah, and trivia.
And trivia.
Then on the 19th of July, there's a CFD Rainiers game, Tacoma Rainiers game.
Yes.
We are definitely in the time of year when all of our volunteers start launching their fundraisers, and the L&I Golf Tournament is coming up July 26th. Starts at 3 p.m. It's at the Capital City Golf Course.
Mm-hmm. If you want to register, contact our office and we can get you in touch with that.
Absolutely. You should go golf. We got local coordinator trainings that are going to start in the July month, and then they'll go through August. So you guys, if you're volunteers and you need to go to trainings, you'll see links for those coming up soon.
And if you're a campaign leader, make sure you tell your local coordinators to sign up.
Go to training, indeed. And then on July 30th, the L&I on Linderson, they are having the L&I flower sale.
I didn't know this.
Well, guess what? It doesn't matter that you didn't know it, because we have a training on that day at L&I.
Yay!
So you will get to go to the flower sale.
Oh, is the best.
It is the best.
You
it's
get
great.
Flowers and it's pretty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Last year I got flowers that had dinosaurs in them.
You did. You're in love with dinosaurs.
That's because they're awesome.
It's because they're awesome, okay?
Yeah. Hello. We still use dinosaurs today. I have dinosaurs in my car right now.
What?
Fossil fuels.
Oh.
See what I did there?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Explosion.
Just mic drop. I mean, end the podcast right now.
Podcast is done. Thanks, Jerrica, for joining us.
Anytime.
All right. Have a great one.